This is ProBlogger.
Hi there, my name's Darren Rouse and I'm the blogger behind ProBlogger.com, a blog, podcast, event and a job board, as well as a series of ebooks, all designed to help you as a blogger to start an amazing blog, to grow your audience, to create some great content for that audience and to build some profit out of that blog. You can learn more about ProBlogger at ProBlogger.com. Now, in today's episode, I have recorded an interview with one of Australia's better-known bloggers, Nikki Parkinson, from the style blog and fashion blog Styling You. I first met Nikki at one of our early ProBlogger events, must have been 2011, maybe 2010, and whilst at the time she was a newish blogger, she really stood out to me as a blogger to watch, partly because of her journalistic background. She was one of the first journalists I'd seen make that switch from mainstream media to blogging, but also because she was someone who was blogging smart. Most bloggers back then were blogging from the heart. They were blogging just because they had something to say. It was almost more of a hobby for many bloggers back then. But Nikki, even from the beginning, seemed to be blogging in a more smart way, in a strategic way. She wasn't just interested in her topic or passionate about her topic, which she is, but she was also being a little bit more strategic, at least to my outsider kind of perception. So Nikki started her blog back in 2008, I think it was July, so it's almost 9 years to the date. And she's not only grown her blog's audience to a pretty large audience, but she's built an amazing business around her blog. She's written a book, she's launched a shop, an online shop, where she sells clothes and accessories. She's an ambassador and done lots of sponsored work with numerous brands in her niche. And she also has her own paid membership program for her readers. So in this chat, we cover a lot, and you're going to want to settle down for this chat because it will go for a little while, but we cover so much ground. We go right back to the beginning and talk about how she got started. We talk about some of the mistakes she made, but also the things that she did early that really paid off. We talk about her approach to writing and creating content, where she gets ideas from. And also, what I found really interesting was her approach to planning content. It's quite different to my approach to planning because of the niche that she's in, which is very newsy, it's very topical, it's very seasonal. And so the approach she has for planning is a little bit different, and her approach to writing is different to what many bloggers do as well, which I think you'll find interesting. We also talk about how she built her audience, how to stand out in a competitive niche. Nikki also talks about not only how to build a large audience, but how to build engagement with your audience. And this is something I particularly think she's very good at. She's got an amazing Facebook group, a private Facebook group. And she tells us about the strategy that she's used, not only to build that group up in numbers, but also a strategy that simultaneously builds her email list. It's really smart and something that I'm considering doing as well. We also talk about monetization, how she made her first dollar, how she worked with brands, how she built her membership program, about her shop where she sells the products that she writes about. And also, and I know this will be interesting to many of you because we get asked about this in the group all the time, she talks about how she deals with brands who want to send her free stuff. And many bloggers get this as well. And how she turns some of those approaches into paid partnerships. Lastly, we talk about productivity and scaling her business and hiring a team to help her. And now, if it sounds like we cover a lot in this interview, you are right. We do. We go deep. We go wide. We cover a lot of stuff. The cool thing, though, is that whilst Nikki's blog is on styling, particularly for women, I think most of what we cover is really relevant for most niches. So grab a cup of your favorite beverage and settle down with a blanket in your favorite beanbag, or get your hiking shoes on and get ready to go for a long walk, or get that massive pile of ironing that you've been ignoring in the laundry ready. Let's spend an hour or so with Nikki Parkinson from Styling You. Oh, and her dog does decide to join us at the end as well, so get ready for that towards the end. Today's show notes are over at problogger.com/podcast/196. And if you want to check out Nikki's blog, Styling You, head over to stylingyou.com.au. Okay, I'll be back at the end of the interview and we'll wrap things up then. Enjoy this interview with Nikki.
Creating great content, finding an audience, building engagement, monetizing your blog. This is ProBlogger.
Hi, Nikki, how are you?
great. Great to be here.
Yeah. Well, I was just looking back in your archives, which is always a scary thing. And I realized that when this podcast goes out, you'll be about a month away from have been blogging for 9 years. So congratulations.
Thank you. I am the accidental blogger, though. I didn't know what I was. I didn't actually know I was blogging. I just had a website that I found out later.
Blog. So I think it was 2008, July, maybe.
Yep. Yes, it was. Yeah.
I wonder maybe if we can go back to that moment. Your first post was titled "What to Wear When You Don't Have a Uniform," and maybe people could go back to that.
Or have dug back. I didn't even know what I think. Because I was a journalist, Aaron, and I just thought, I'm just going to get a lot of content up there.
Yeah.
And they would be very boring, and those posts.
They were useful from the day one, though. That's what I found. Like, your first one is a how-to post or what to wear type post. So you obviously started with some sort of a how-to teaching type thing in mind. What can maybe if you can just tell us why you started and give us a little bit of information about what you were doing before.
Sure. So I was a journalist for 20 years and edited a weekly magazine in the newspaper where I worked. And I kind of had a now or never moment sort of about this time, actually, this time 9 years ago. And I thought, oh my goodness, is this it? Is this me? I was 41 and I loved what I did, but you could feel like there had been redundancies, and that was the first time I'd seen redundancies in quite a long career in the editorial department. And I knew the things that to go would be the things I liked working on, which was the magazine type things and the feature stories. And the politics around it was getting quite toxic because, you know, if there's a squeeze from resources from above, then it all flows down and it's not a very nice work environment. My husband had also started commuting to Brisbane about an hour and a half on a good day, mostly 2 hours each way. So one of us needed to be flexible around the family. And I was so naive. I just went, oh, I'm just leaving. I'm going to start a business.
Yeah.
And I had 4 months long service leave behind me and that was it. But, you know, I look back and I go, I'm kind of glad I didn't know anything, you know, because even on the business front, I'd interviewed, you know, hundreds of business people over the years of my former career, but actually running one yourself is a very, very different ball game, as you would know. But so I said I would start a personal styling business. Because in my former role, you know, coordinate fashion shoots and was heavily involved. I was the fashion editor and beauty editor for quite some time. And I just thought I'd just start it because, you know, you can just do that, can't you? And I needed a website for that, but I didn't want a website that I would have to go back to someone to update. And 9 years ago, that was still very much the norm, that if you were a business and you wanted a website, then you paid a ridiculous amount of money for something that you couldn't even change yourself. So I was very fortunate that a person who worked with my husband said, oh, well, you need a blog. And I went, sure, just get me one of those.
Yeah.
because I wanted to continue sharing information like I had done in my former job. And so that's why I call myself the accidental blogger, because I just wanted a website I could update myself. And it was really in that, towards the end of that first year, that I realized that blogging was a thing and it was more fun than what I was doing in terms of content.
Yeah. So your early goal was to use a blog almost to support your business.
Correct.
And the blog became your business? Would you say that was the accidental part of it? How do you think your background in journalism helped you in your blogging? And on the other side of things, how do you think what mind shifts did you have to make from journalism to become a blogger?
Yeah, so where it helped me is that we were always especially in latter years, trained to imagine the reader. Readers first was the policy. So you're always putting either the reader in, a sample reader in the story, or you were writing it because it was a topic that would be pertinent to your reader. So, you know, they had various demographics and everything that we were writing to. So that mindset was definitely very helpful in forming content. I had to personally change, and this is what, if people are digging back in the archives to 2008, was a very sort of a non-personal style of writing. So I'm not a personal blog, but I'm a blog written personally. And I think that's, if you're an individual blogger, that's kind of the key to content connecting with people. So that was a major change, because as a journalist, you are, unless you're a columnist, you are trained not to put yourself into the story. So obviously I'm flipping that on the head.
And if you look at your blog today, you're there everywhere. Like, yes. Your face is there, but yes. Not only that, it's in your content and it comes out, your story comes out. Yes. You're writing personal things.
Yes.
Yeah. And do you think that has been a big part of your success, having that personality in your content? Yeah.
Like, not everyone's going to like me, and that's probably my big message to people, is that you can't be anybody but who you are. And not everyone's going to resonate with you, but hopefully you will find your tribe by just being yourself, because that's all I've done over the period of time. And obviously as the blog's grown and I've done live events and I've talked to people, imagine if you hadn't been yourself all of this time, it'd be very hard to keep up something that you're not, for starters. Plus I think it just, the sheer volume of content, it would be very difficult to not be anything but yourself and keep that consistency.
Yeah. Did you find that hard to do? Was that something you had fear around, putting your face on your blog, allowing yourself to come out in that way?
I didn't at the start. I guess because of my background, I had a small profile just in where I lived. But also when I started, you know, you don't have a lot of people following. So there would be cases today where people start and they have a very quick following suddenly. It's a very different, with the social media that it's around now, it's a very different possibility with that. But it's always been such a gradual organic thing that you kind of, it's not been a sudden thing. So I think that's enables you to not get freaked out by it.
Yeah, you get used to it step by step. Looking back on those early days, was there one or two things that you did that you're really glad that you did, even accidental things?
Yes. So really glad that I paid someone else from the get-go to set everything up. Really glad that he said you need a WordPress blog. Like, they're just two things that that I know that a lot of startup bloggers struggle with. Not so much the platform these days, because I think that back then there was the blogger versus WordPress situation, but more on struggling with their own thing to get the platform up. I know you can do it yourself, but I'm a big believer in your zone of genius, and you can get a very basic site, WordPress site, up that you can manage then yourself. I think that's your best investment straight off the bat.
Mm. Conversely, were there any mistakes that you made in those early days you would advise people avoiding?
I mistakes were mainly the way I wrote wasn't in a connective kind of way, and I don't think that would happen anymore, because it's blogging is just such a known thing these days that if you're wanting to do that, you can really stalk and follow and look how people do content and everything and get a hook on that. I think that was the biggest mistake I made, but I very soon came around to it when Twitter really became a thing in Australia, when it was right back when it was a fun place to hang out, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
it was like, oh, let's just go to this little party tonight on Twitter. And that's where I met a lot and connected with a lot of people working in the online space, and realized that this blogging thing, and then I delved into their blogs, and that's when I realized that it was about how the content was written to make it engaging so that people would leave these things called comments. You know, up until then, I just had spam. So it was, that was the biggest mistake I made. So I think if writing conversationally isn't something that comes naturally to you, then that's something to work on from the get-go.
That's great. And how did you actually learn to do that? How did that conversational style of writing come about? Did you have a person in mind that you began to write to, or did something else happen?
I think sort of locked away all those years as a journalist was someone who was just yearning to have a chat as opposed to writing in an editorial kind of structure or a creative kind of structure. So for me, it is just imagining a girlfriend sitting down having a cup of tea or a glass of wine, depending on what time of day it is, and writing like that. And then that becomes kind of second nature to you because that is generally how you talk.
Yeah. Do you have an avatar in mind? Have you ever gone to that stage of creating a persona or an avatar, or is it just the girlfriend that you have in mind?
Yeah, generally, I think over time, I'm going to have to develop more because I'm 50. By the time this airs, I'm 50. So I'm almost edging myself out of my chief demographic. So I probably have a number of avatars now that I think about, and can probably put names to them because they are beautiful readers and followers who come back time and again and are either very active in my groups, in my paid program. And so you really get to know these women and understand how you've already helped them and how you can help them again. So that's where I've been fortunate to make some quite close connections. So my avatars are pretty related to exact people, which is kind of reverse stalking creepiness, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I've found since I've done live events that I start writing and creating podcasts for individuals, and I'm actually thinking about a person as I'm speaking, and it comes across more personal, I think. Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, is the next step from the avatar, that you kind of, if you've met people or you've had a really close connection with them online, then it is really easy to make that connection and understand what that is that they want from you. How are you going to help them?
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
Let's talk about content for a little while. Sally in the Facebook group asked us, or asked me to ask you about how you come up with ideas to write about.
Yeah, that's something I've never struggled with. And I think part of that also, as a journalist, you weren't told what to write. You had to come in every day to the chief of staff with your ideas. So your brain gets kind of trained to always be on the ball with things. So how that sort of has its own track, plus a reader interaction gives you great ideas all the time. If someone is asking the question, you can bet your bottom dollar that 50 other people want to know the same thing. And then there's, for my topic, there's seasonal things that come up as well. And sometimes it can be just something that I've experienced that I have a feeling that other people will be keen to hear about that as well. So it's a combination of all those things, but it is training your brain to always be alert to ideas and taking note of them, obviously, when they come through. And I would have more ideas than I have time or capacity to write them, but I think if you are blogging about a topic that you really, really enjoy, then those ideas will, and enjoy and live, those ideas will keep flowing.
Yeah. And I guess writing on, you know, fashion, style, beauty, those types of topics, there are always new things happening in those spaces as well. I personally just wear blue t-shirts, so and I have for 10 years.
That's a blog topic for me, Darren.
I know. I'm happy to write that for you. 10 blue t-shirts that you can wear. But I guess if you're really into that topic, there's always something fresh emerging that you can write about. I guess the question that I have about that is, how do you keep it fresh when you've been doing this for 9 years? You've written about autumn fashion for 9 years, I presume. does that ever get boring? And how do you stay fresh yourself, but also how do you keep that fresh for your readers?
That's a really, really good point and a good question, because you do have new readers every year. So while you might have, in your head, you've already covered that topic, it still needs to be revisited. So, you know, an example is ankle boots. You know, I think that's been a topic in some shape or form on the blog for the last 5 winters. And whenever the need is there, then I will tackle it, and I will look back at the posts that I've done, go, okay, well, those tips are still relevant. I'll include those, but I think I should add this. So you're almost re-editing what you did, adding different things in. And the key thing that is new each year or each season is the product that you are linking to has to be fresh. So it's all very well for them to delve back into the archives. They'll get tips, but none of those products will be available. So I guess it's fresh by the product that you're featuring and recommending.
Right. How far in advance are you thinking about content?
Not far enough, probably no. I have a rough plan. I use CoSchedule, and I have a rough plan that sort of probably extends a couple of months out, and then that's always subject to change. But because of the product-driven nature, I'm not generally writing that far in advance. Because if I said, oh, yeah, I'm going to do all these things and I'm going to write 3 months in advance, none of that product will be available. So, and a big thing for the topic that I deal is that people are actually wanting specifics to buy or to click through and have a better look at. So I'm only going to annoy people if I do all that in advance and don't have what's available now, right now, to buy. So, so sometimes it's not unusual for me to rewriting the day, night before.
Right.
And so I'm not your productivity blogger. Sorry, not that productive. And do you know what? I think it's still a hang up from the journalism days where it wasn't fresh unless you wrote it the day before.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is what I see with Vanessa, and you know, she's writing on similar topics, that she can't be writing 2 weeks out like I do when I'm going on holidays, for that same reason. And, you know, I didn't really understand that when she first started, but it presents some challenges. So you don't write multiple posts at a certain time of every day? I mean, what's that writing process look like for you?
That's been my goal for the last 9 years,
yeah.
Darren. every week I say, no, today is the day I'm just going to have a writing day, and it just goes out the window. I am my own worst enemy. And I was talking, my daughter is 20 and she's in her fourth year of uni, and I had her and her housemates around the other night for dinner, and they're all like productivity guns, and my daughter's explaining what happens to her, and I said, I think I'm really sorry, because I think I've just passed that on. We always get it done, but we're always shocking at the last minute. So yes, I'm shocking. And I, you know, in my head, I want to have a day a week that I do all the writing. So much other stuff cuts in, and it shouldn't cut in, but it's also the nature of working for yourself that sometimes you can't have that happen.
And perhaps that's your personality style when you work at your best.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't fight it. But the worst thing is I'm more creative at night, but that is not conducive to getting up early the next morning and exercising. So I'm working against my own rhythms at the moment.
All right. We just had an interview with Kelly Exeter very recently, where she talked about getting up, I think it was like 4:15 in the morning to exercise. And I was like, I don't really.
5:30 is killing me at the moment.
Oh, it's my gosh. Guys, you're putting me to shame. So what about finding readers? You obviously have a readership. It's fairly active. You've got lots of engagement going on as I look around your blog and particularly on Facebook. Did you spend much time and effort focusing upon that growth of readership, or did it happen to you?
A bit of both. The focusing comes from being where your readers are potentially going to hang out. So if you go back to 2008 when I started, Facebook business pages started not long after. So I think, was it maybe, I'm thinking October 2008. Anyway, it was very much in alignment with when I started, and I started the business page. I am very good at this early adopting kind of thing, and so I've just jumped on every social media as it's happened. I've either stayed around or I've just got it for the handle so no one else has it. But I remember that being, you know, even with a couple of thousand on Facebook, that made a big difference to how you could grow the community. And back in 2008, no one was accessing on your blog, on your phone, sorry. It was all desktop or laptop. So it's a very different scenario. And I always saw answering to comments, being present on social media. I still think about it. It is, that's part of building your community on a daily basis. I never saw it as separate to the job. It's always been part of it. So it's always been an organic growth. Like, I, you know, someone coming in could say, oh, she's got, you know, 65,000 on Facebook, 50,000 on Instagram. It's not big numbers for 9 years, but I've never been about the big number. I've been about the engagement, and that is a two-way situation. That's not something that you can just hope happens. You've actually got to talk to the people who are actually taking time to talk to you. And so there's no quick fix about it. I think that's the, if anyone's starting out, you have to be patient and you have to build that time of engagement into your work day.
Yeah. I was just talking to my personal trainer this morning, and he said the only thing that's going to change your life is persistence. And it's, you know, education will change things a little, genius will change things a little, but it's persistence in every area of your life. And I really see that with blogging. It's persistently showing up, persistently engaging and creating value that does it. So it is a long-term thing.
And definitely back in the early days, and I still do it, I still get around to other people's blogs or Facebook pages or comment on Instagram, other people in either like-minded niches or, and not in a spammy way, in genuinely, hey guys, great, like, you know, I'm really enjoying what you're doing, that was interesting, that part doesn't stop. I think what I really have loved about being in this whole blogging sphere is that it's a connective path job with the readers that you're hoping to get, but it's also connective with people who are doing the same thing. So big believer in getting around and supporting everybody with a comment or a like or just anything. And that flow on effect, I'm a bit woo-woo. It has to sort of, you know, have an impact, not just for being seen in other spaces, but for just, you know, getting out there and sharing that whole online love.
Mm, for sure. What would you say is your largest source of traffic today?
It's still Facebook.
Right.
Yeah, it's still Facebook. And that obviously the percentage used to be massive from Facebook, but what year was it that you had the Pro Blogger event at PV event at Eddie Had Stadium? What year was that?
Oh, gosh. It was the third or fourth year. So we're looking 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah. So I think that I remember everyone at that conference talking about how the algorithm had stuffed up all their traffic. That was when Facebook first started the algorithm things. And I don't get too frustrated. Yes, stuff happens and you go, oh, goodness, you're another thing we've got to deal with. But I still think good content will win out. You know, you mightn't have the big hits that you may have had before whatever change has happened, but good content will still rise to the top and win out. And for my demographic, and this is what I say to anybody, know where your demographic is most likely to be hanging out on social media, because this is where you need to reach them to try and get them back to your blog. And for me, Facebook is still the biggest thing. I have the page, but I also have a closed group of more than 7,000. So that's extremely active. Someone told me the other day they were tracking it and there was a new comment every 5 seconds or something at nighttime. So that is kind of where I've seen the evolution of where people are asking questions, it's all happening in that group. And I think you've got to see whatever social media you're doing and ride with them where most people are going to be comfortable about chatting. There's definitely fewer comments on the blog now than there are on social media.
Creating great content and building your audience. This is Pro Blogger.
So Jade asked over in our Facebook group about Facebook and your community, and asked if you had any tips on community management in that space.
Oh, yeah. Look, I'm very lucky. I set the tone for all of my platforms from the get-go. I don't like nastiness and I don't have it in my house, so I'm not going to have it in my any of my online spaces. You don't see it in any of my posts or anything like that. So that tone is set across by me being me across all of my online platforms. So that actually discourages a lot of people from landing and being a bit narky or a bit ranty. And it doesn't mean we lose all of it. We definitely get the odd comment, just wrong tone. And in the groups, we've got very good guidelines that we just don't accept it. We don't accept any attacking another person, attacking me, making anyone feel less than they should, because what I'm about is beyond style. It's about women feeling confident and supported. So I can't have a group or an online space where they are fearful of asking a question for being made to feel ridiculous. So that's kind of setting the tone has been crucial, but we have those official guidelines in place and we are not afraid to block, because it will ruin the experience for everybody else.
Yeah, that's great.
Bit tough like that, but it's you know, you work hard to build up these communities and people come to you for a reason. And it's just, I think if you set the tone, and your tone might be ranty and snarky, which is fine, just go for it. But I think you've got to have those strict guidelines. I also have community managers supporting me, so it's not me monitoring it 24/7.
Mm. Yeah. How did you find those first people? Are they a paid group, or is that volunteers from within the group?
For the
in your Facebook group, managers, community managers.
So they're paid, part of my team. So it's coming up to 12 months ago. I've always for the last probably since that, we'll remember the year soon at Etihad Stadium, Huma Bate came up to me and said, if you're ever looking for any help, I'd love to help you out. And I contacted her the next week. So from that moment, I've always paid someone to help out in some kind of way. And how that's looked has changed to reflect what projects I might be doing or what the focus is. So for about a year coming up to this 12 months, I actually paid writers to write. But what was happening is that people weren't coming to read what they had to say because they wanted only content from me. So that was not a good, was great content. I loved it. Gave me a break from the writing, but I realized it wasn't the best use of resources. And then I was talking to Kim Beach Fit, who runs Beach Fit Community, and her husband about how they set up their communities. And that's when I thought, oh, you know what, I'm just going to start this group for subscribers. And it went to 2,000 very quickly, and it was July we started, and so we're 7,200, and it's nuts. They are wonderful. Like, we thought, oh, we'll have all these plans to generate content from the start, you know, generate conversation. From the get-go, they were answering each other's questions, helping each other out, and just, oh, if you could bottle that atmosphere and put it out there, it would be fantastic. So that has all been very helpful for me. And so originally I went to the blogging community and people who I know to help me with that. And originally it was Rabina from Mummy and the Minx. And then I got Kirsten from Kirsten & Co. And Rabina went back to her corporate work at the start of this year. And that's when I got Jasmine from Pretty Chuffed on board. So they share the day and they've worked it out who wants the morning and who wants the night and checking in. And they also help me behind the scenes with different things, campaign reports, helping run my paid program as well. So great to have women also working in the online space and understanding it, and that they're incorporating that into their working week. Mm.
One of the things I noticed as I was looking at your group or the way you promote your group is that you don't ever link to your group on your blog or on your site. Instead, you link or you ask people to sign up. And then you send them a link to your blog, which I found fascinating. So you are generating or building your email list as well as getting people to your group. How does that work for you?
Well, it definitely has grown the subscriber list, or if you're already on the list, that link is always in there because obviously you've signed up. What's happened now, though, is that it comes up as one of Facebook's recommended groups. So we don't take the time to go back. We don't apply resources because I didn't think it was valid enough to go back and check that they're actually subscribers. But the whole method and motivation was something that I've talked to Kim Beach about, and that's how they generate their email list, and it very much works for them.
Yeah, so it's almost like an opt-in. Some people give away a PDF, but you give away your group.
A community.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Come to the party.
I think that would be one strategy a lot of bloggers could use. Yeah, so it's still it's a closed group, but it's not a secret group.
No.
Just one more thing on community. You've used hashtags really well. I love everyday style. I see it in my Instagram all the time, which is great. Where did that idea come from, everyday style, and using that hashtag to build your brand, I guess, in many ways?
Yeah, so it's end of 2013, and I had a question from a reader saying, so I like all the outfits you put on the blog, you know, you're dressed up and everything, but I'd love to know what you wear every day. And I had to laugh. I think I remember looking down at shorts and t-shirt. It wasn't a blue t-shirt though, Darren, it was probably something else. And I thought, I'm really not living what I'm promoting here. And I've got a whole wardrobe full of clothes and I'm not wearing them. So I thought, oh, I'll do it for a week. I'll just show on Instagram what my daily outfit is for a week and just call it everyday style. And I think Vanessa had already been using the term everyday style, and I was horrified when I started because I realized that I'd just like, taken it, and it was just a mess.
I didn't even know that.
I didn't think I was going on with it. Mm. I just thought it was a week, and then by the end of the week, people were joining in, and I'm gone, okay. And then my book was in proofing and production, so it got put in the book, and I thought, oh, I better keep going on this. So I haven't actually missed a day since late November 2013, and other Instagrammers got on board with it as well. A mistake I made from the start is not putting like SY or something with it, because it's now there's more than 200,000 shares on it, shares to that hashtag, and it's not all part of this community. It's certainly, you know, as for Instagram style bloggers around Australia, it's been a lovely way to connect, but it kind of, yeah, that would be my only suggestion if you want to get a hashtag going, is
brand it somehow.
And I know Chantelle Fat Mum Slim had similar things in her early days without FMS attached to photo a day. It got not hijacked, but, you know, people see that a hashtag is popular and then they just throw it on.
Yeah, it gets a life of its own, I guess.
Yeah, whether they're participating or not, they're just throwing it on there. So definitely it's been a fun thing, and I'm not game to miss a day. And it literally is, people ask me, do you shoot all those in advance? I said, no, it's literally what I'm wearing that day. If I'm down the street or doing the school run or after school and I'm not in what I've posted, then it's kind of like getting caught out. I just don't want that to, like, it is what I'm doing. Yeah. So. Yeah.
I guess it humanizes your brand, but it also, the thing I love about it is that your readers are participating, and so they get, not only get to see themselves on the hashtag, but they see who else is reading the blog, and I think that somehow brings about community.
Yeah, it does, and also that community within other Instagrammers and bloggers in Australia, because all about part of my ethos is that all women are real, but trying to create inspiration for a whole wide range of women on that hashtag, there is someone your age, your shape, your style, like, that you can get ideas and everything from, and they're an everyday person, and that's kind of been a great thing. And yes, as more readers have become confident about sharing their outfits, then that's been a great thing. In my online program, they share their outfits in that group every day, and that's, you know, that for that, for some people, that's a huge step, and that's in a closed group. So yeah, it's to do it on Instagram, but also then to, for those people who are, they're actually providing awesome inspiration for so many.
That's great. So you've talked about your online program a few times. Let's talk about monetization.
Sure.
How did you make your first dollar from the blog?
Well, technically it would have been from people booking one-on-one style styling appointments, but actually on the blog was a banner ad, probably 2010, and later that year or into 2011, first sponsored post. So that was definitely the first way that I did it. And I guess the banner ad thing came from, and my first site wasn't even set up to take banner ads. It didn't have a sidebar. It was a second incarnation. And I think that was the banner ad thing was a hangover from newspaper days, because that media, like, that just seemed an obvious thing. And people asked me for them. So I went, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long did it take you to get to that point where you consider what you were doing full time?
Yes. So I would say, well, I stopped taking personal styling clients at the beginning of 2012, and that was because the income from the blog was far exceeding the personal styling, and the personal styling was almost, it wasn't a good business model for me. In fact, my clients would say, this is great, I've had 2 hours with you, I don't need you anymore. And I'm going, oh, okay. Kind of thought you'd come back, but anyway, and that's when I thought, well, that takes a lot of energy and effort, and it's a set amount of time that you can devote to it every week. And so when the blog side had started to take off, then I bit the bullet and had, you just kind of had to, there's always going to be a tipping point. I had to back myself, and sure enough, it was fine. So I have called myself full-time blogger since the beginning of 2012. So it's five years now.
How to build and monetize your blog. This is Pro Blogger.
Can you talk to us just for a moment about that, that in-between period? You were doing personal sort of styling on the side.
I was doing everything. University tutoring, freelance PR, freelance writing, And this is what I say to people, like, that was essentially me having a job and building up the blog. So if you're already in a job, maybe stay in your job, build up the blog. Crazy, ridiculous hours. And I think my husband had probably only given me about 6 months, six more months of seeing the back of me at the computer at nighttime to make things happen, or it would have been back to finding a job. I look back and I remember very tough periods, and tough emotionally, tough financially. And we're lucky, my husband had his job, and so the mortgage was paid and everything, but, you know, it just went from two sure incomes to one and, you know, if you look at it on paper over the year, it did make it up, but it was a very hard slog to make it up. And all I can say is that I just really, really enjoyed what I was doing. I still enjoy it. Like, you know, there isn't an easy day now. It's not like you just have a day to fluff around and do nothing. It running a business and feeding the blog and feeding all the content is hard work. But I look back and I never felt like I wanted to give it up. And I think that cannot, in hindsight, that can only be that I really enjoyed the buzz of it. I enjoyed the connection with other people doing blogging, but I also enjoyed the connections that I was growing with my community. So there was never a point where I went, I'm just gonna throw this in, just go back or find a new job or, yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about your income streams today? What are the main income streams? Obviously, banner ads probably isn't the number one anymore, I'm thinking, but
It's still there. Yeah. And my banner advertisers, see, and this is why I never diss on that either, because some of my banner advertisers grow into sponsorships and ambassadorships because of the association and relationship they've grown with me. So I've probably got about 3 case studies and just a new one yesterday that they are doing a 6-month campaign with me from August, and they've been a banner advertiser for maybe 3 or 4 years. And that it does help to build a relationship with the brand. And for that brand, it's especially independence, it's a low level way to buy in, if that makes any sense. But still the lion's share of my total blog income is from sponsorships and ambassadorships. And ambassadorships are basically 6 or 12 month long contracts that include a variety of different things on and off the blog for that particular brand. So that's still the lion's share. And I introduced my seasonal online shop 2 years ago. So we've done just almost finished the 6th of those edits. So that brings in income twice a year. We are going to be probably, by the time this goes live, I'm going to stock some of my favorite products, not just fashion, in between the seasonal edits. So that's something that my personal assistant has driven, which is awesome because she's very good at handling all that side of things. And then the online program, I started the first one last September, and we're almost at the end of the second one, and that's seasonal based as well. So that was a new income stream last year. That has been really successful, successful income stream wise, but also for really connecting with a smaller subset of the community and offering as close as I can get to one-on-one kind of advice without actually physically going out and doing that.
All right, mate, can we just go back to the ambassadorships and maybe we'll walk through those 3 that you've just mentioned? I'd love to know what a typical sort of ambassadorship might look like for you. And I know it probably does vary a bit from brand to brand, but what would one look like?
So the cornerstone content is still going to be sponsored posts on the blog, and that is like key. But packaged in with that over 6 or 12 months can be in-store appearances, Facebook live events. I did one last night for a brand Adrift I'm ambassadorship for. Next week in Frankie 4 in Melbourne, that's part of my ambassadorship with them that I'm going down there. So it is using engaging me to connect a brand to my audience. And so how that looks from the brand perspective is fitting in with their marketing. It's obviously also social media content and that as well. It's shooting, being involved in campaign shoots for a brand. So there's a whole lot of different things and a lot of flexibility in working with that brand's aims across a longer period of time, and how you can support that, how you can best share what they've got going on. And because it's fashion, there's always new stuff. So it's always around the new. And Yeah, that's they're the best alliances that I like doing, because you're really getting involved with another business and really helping them grow as well. So all of my long-term ambassadorships, current ones, have started from a very small beginning. Frankie Four for Existence, for example, gifted me a pair of silver sneakers, which I just loved, and then everyone loved because I put them on Instagram, and then it went nuts and they sold a lot. And that has grown from a very small beginning. And when I'm talking to people about working with brands, the most successful relationships I've had have started from those small beginnings where you've actually grown with the brand. And you love the brand, you know your audience loves the brand, so you're kind of all on the same page. And that's where, if I look back, that's been the most successful campaigns that I've done.
Sure. So you spoke there about a gifting, and I know a lot of bloggers, they don't sometimes know what to do, you know, when they're asked, can I buy brands, can I send you something? Some bloggers are like, well, should I be charging for that? Should I just accept it? What's your stance on that, particularly for a new blogger starting out?
For a new blogger starting out, if you're still building your audience and building your relationships, then you're probably not going to be able to charge anything for that. What I'm very big on, whether you're starting out or whether you've been going a long time, is you don't have to accept something just because someone's sending it to you. If it's not your style, but in talking about fashion, or it's not something that you could seamlessly fit into your content, I guess this is my journalism background. If it's something that I know I can incorporate into my everyday style just as part of the editorial process, then that's okay. But if they start asking for specific hashtags, specific dates of placement, specific timings, then that's bordering, that's commercial. That's when they're essentially booking advertising. When they gift you something in the hope that you'll feature it, then there's not usually a payment involved. It's tricky when you're starting out because it's really exciting that people want to send you things and all of that thing, but you kind of need to at some point draw a line in the sand, and that line gets pushed for me every week. And what I've learned is if you push back because something's not right, then it tends to come through, or something else better will come through. And I think that's the toughest part. Brands are just thinking, I'm just going to send something and they have to feature it. My hot tip to brands is actually suss out whether the person wants to receive it in the first place, because there are plenty of bloggers who don't want to receive product. And actually give the blogger a choice. Say if it's clothing, say, I'd like to gift you a piece of clothing. Would you like to choose from XYZ or go to my website? And the person on the receiving end is either going to make the choice going, oh, I really like that piece of clothing, I like that brand, I'm happy to feature it in this post I'm doing. Say it's a knitwear, I'm going to feature it in this knitwear post. So it goes into their content seamlessly, but not exclusively. That's the other thing. I have a rule: if you want exclusive content, no other brands mentioned on my blog or social media, then that's a paid situation. And I think the media background definitely has helped for me to draw those lines and be able to build relationships, but say, no, actually that's a commercial arrangement, so you need to, let's talk about how we can make that work for each other.
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
So let's talk about your shop. I've always wondered what's going on your shop, whether it was an affiliate marketing thing or whether you're drop shipping, where you're taking orders and then someone else is sending it, or whether you're holding the stock yourself. Can you give us a little bit of information about that?
Yeah, sure. So to start with, so back in 2015, it was set up as a drop shipping arrangement. We have our shop on a Shopify platform, which was really easy to set up and get going very quickly. And what I chose to stock was not random things just all thrown in. It was actually putting together a seasonal capsule wardrobe that people could use as the building blocks for the season ahead. And I was working with suppliers who I already had a relationship with. So the orders would come through to us, and we would forward the orders on to the suppliers, and each supplier would send out the garments from that particular order that were pertaining to them. But this one we've just done, we actually have bought all the stock, wholesaled the stock. So that has been a big step, and it's been driven by my assistant, who has a Scottish voice. So I'm not even going to attempt the accent. But last year she said, "This is ridiculous, and we should be doing this ourselves." And rah, rah, rah. And I went, "Okay, Rach, we're on." And yes, it is more of a risk because you've got to buy. But I had 2 years of reporting about what sold, and quantities and sizes, and you're never going to hit completely on the mark, but I wasn't coming into it cold and trying to understand what was going to be popular and what was going to sell. So that has been a great thing to do this time around, and we will continue that, and that's why we'll also start stocking other things in between times in the shop as well. The seasonal edit works really well as well, because I'm not selling a whole bunch of clothes across the whole year. I'm actually giving people a formula. I'm creating demand. And we do most of our sales the first 2 days that the shop launches
right.
each season.
So you're doing a lot of those sales via email to your list and Facebook group, I presume?
Yeah. So email, Facebook group, there's a blog post always to launch it. And this time around, we launched it in conjunction with the online program. So the online program features a capsule wardrobe as a roadmap for the season ahead. So 20 of the 30 pieces in that capsule wardrobe were actually available for sale in the shop. So people could buy from the shop, or I had 5 other suggestions as to what to buy. But that definitely generated sales in itself, and people on the flip side weren't necessarily in the online program, but they've bought from the shop before, and so they trust what they get.
Sure. And so the style program, the online program that you've mentioned, what do people get for that? I notice at the moment I can't sign up. not that I think you've got anything for me, but there's no blue t-shirts on your blog. But
I didn't keep that in mind.
Yeah, well, maybe
spring, summer, it's going to happen.
Boys run.
So it's I was contacted by a woman called Alison Labatis from Stylegistics in the States, and it was one of those emails that was kind of a bit random and out of the blue, and I've gone, actually, I'm reading this and it's making a bit of sense. And she says, jump on a Skype call. And I jumped on a Skype call, and she made a lot of sense, which was really good. And it's something that she's developed based around a capsule wardrobe program. And I've just adapted it, obviously, for my audience and also the amount of time. I think she runs herself. She runs probably about 6 or 7 a year, whereas I'm just doing the 2 and I'm combining the seasons, autumn, winter, spring, summer. And all the creative is mine. Like, I choose all the garments and I choose all the options. And this time I use my own graphic designer to put together all the pieces for her platform, because I needed that seamless look. So, but the actual program itself, people log into a different platform and they send out the daily emails, and they send out all the sales kind of stuff and handle that kind of things, and then pay me less there.
Yeah.
Their commission.
Sure. So when someone's signing up for your program, what are they actually getting?
What they get is 6 weeks worth of outfit prompts and really tailored advice in the Facebook group, which is way smaller. We've got, I think, about 200 in there doing the program at the moment. So it's like a smaller subset of the bigger community, and it is a whole bunch of women of different ages who, for whatever reason, are just wanting some style support throughout the season. The ones who are doing it the second time, they just love the community aspect of it, as well as the fact we don't have to think what we're wearing each day. So basically they have a blueprint for the whole season, and I'm teaching them how to create and adapt a capsule wardrobe for themselves.
Right. And what do they pay for a season?
So it's six. If they're just doing the 6 weeks, it's $99. If they do the 6 months, it's $149. So some people's, there's no outfit prompts after the 6 week period, but the Facebook group exists as a way to get to me and get specific information from me and group camaraderie for the season.
Yeah, and I presume you're talking about the products in your shop, or at least some of them, as part of that as well. So there might be some additional income that comes in there.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. So a lot of them were very keen buyers of the shop because those pieces were recommended. But for every piece, say a blue t-shirt was recommended, I had a budget option, a petite option, a plus size option, and a workwear option. So that doesn't matter what your lifestyle is, I offer those options up for the person to have as guidelines. And then the other thing is, they don't necessarily have to buy any clothes at all. It could be a way that they organize their own wardrobe to fit into the program.
That's great. I love that. And I love the way that your style program and shop kind of work together. I would presume there's almost like a flow on with some of your products from the shop from ambassadorships and sponsorships as well, and those types of relationships. Yeah. So it's a monetization sort of strategy that does have some overlap.
A lot of overlap. And I think the key thing of all of the monetization that I do, whatever avenue it is, the most successful ones have been those relationships. It's been based on relationships, and that's been the key. And it's relationships between the suppliers or my/sponsors, and then the relationships between the community. So they actually want to buy from you, which is a really nice feeling, because they could actually go to all these shops, individual online shops, and buy the things, but they're actually wanting to buy from you, which is a really lovely thing.
That's great. Let's kind of move towards wrapping this up, but I did have a few questions from the group about your productivity. How do you get it all done? Which we sort of did touch on a little bit earlier, but one of the things I have noticed that when I talk to full-time bloggers is that they have to make mind shifts along the way. After many times they build systems or routines that help them to kind of get things done. Has that been the case for you? Can you talk to us about maybe a couple of the mind shifts and the routines that you've had to develop?
I'm a shocker. I am, and people who know me think I'm the most organized. My friends would say I'm the most organized person out. I think because I get the thing done. It was interesting talking to my daughter about it. And because we get the things done, I need a deadline. Don't send me something and saying, here's some questions. Put a date on there. Put a time on there. And, that has to happen. Having said that, I run my iCal like nobody's business. I have a big calendar up on the wall that's very visual as well. I haven't, maybe this is my problem. I've got too many things where I'm writing stuff down. And productivity tools, I use Asana for my team. So that's really good. Everybody assigns tasks in there to each other. I obviously assign tasks to the team in there. And for editorial content on the blog and social media and in the groups, co-schedule has been. So probably having those tools keeps me in check. One of my biggest weakness is easily distracted. So that's kind of really bad. When you have a workload that's not, and I think my best days are when there's no gaps and you just have to put your head down, bum up. And irony is, social media is my biggest distraction. So, part of the mindset is you tell yourself that you've got to be on it. And then, an email shocking. And I tell myself that I should only check twice a day, but I'm not good at that either. Yeah. I'm sorry. People need to talk to Kelly about productivity.
Well, no, I think it's good that people hear different things, because I'm probably more like you than Kelly, although I can snap myself into a week of Kelly where I'll be very good. And they're often the weeks that I just have to switch on. But the rest of my life, I allow myself to be a little bit crazy and distracted and spontaneous, because that's my personality. And I actually do my best work in those weeks as well, where I allow myself to be myself. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing is, no 2 days for me could be the same.
Yeah.
So this week I had a very long day in Sydney for a client all day, like work. I had photo shoots and a Facebook Live yesterday. I have meetings tomorrow. Yeah, just a lot of different things that you don't necessarily have a uniform week, because it can be quite client driven. So that's what can throw me out. Yeah.
Thanks for chatting with us today, Nikki. I really do appreciate all your time, but also words of wisdom. It's been great to chat with you.
Thanks, Darren. It's been awesome. I can't believe you went back to my first blog post. Oh, my God.
I won't link to it in the show notes, but we certainly will link to Styling You and some of the other things that you've mentioned in the show notes today. And, yeah, I really do appreciate your time. Is anything, anywhere that you would like our readers to come and check out, anything that you've got new going on at the moment?
No, the blog, the actual blog itself is like the funnel to everywhere. And, the program has finished. The shop will have some fun things in it, but no, just come over to the blog, join the community. We'd love to have you there.
Great. Thanks so much, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks, Darren.
This is Pro Blogger.
Wow, we did cover a lot of ground there. I hope you enjoyed that interview and had a good walk, or got some ironing done, or had a good time in that beanbag. If you want to check out Nikki's blog, you can go over to stylingyou.com.au. You can also check out in our show notes today at problogger.com/podcast/196. I'll have a link to her blog. I'll also have a link to her Facebook group sign up page, which I think is really interesting. Nikki also mentions co-shed in this interview, and if you are curious about that, check out our last episode, episode 195, where we talk about how we use CoSchedule at ProBlogger as well. Lastly, check out the Facebook group over at problogger.com/group, where we talk about every episode. If you've got questions, if you've got feedback on the episode, you can do it there. And we also have every week, there must be 50 or so different discussions on different topics around blogging as well. I also have been doing a Facebook Live once a week, a teaching Facebook Live once a week, and we stream that into that group as well. So if you want to check that out, head over to problogger.com/group, and it will forward you into Facebook. Thanks for listening. And if you're still looking for something to listen to, head back to 195, the episode that we just put up last week on CoSchedule, or dig around in iTunes, because every one of those 195 episodes is sitting in there. Whilst you're there, would appreciate it if you'd subscribe and leave us a little review. Thanks for listening today, and I'll be back with you in episode 197 and 98 as well, coming up to that 200 mark. Thanks, everyone. Chat soon.
You've been listening to Pro Blogger. If you'd like to comment on any of today's topics or subscribe to the series, find us at problogger.com/podcast. Tweet us at Pro Blogger. Find us at facebook.com/ProBlogger, or search Pro Blogger on iTunes.
Before I go, I want to give a big shout out and say thank you to Craig Hewitt and the team at Podcast Motor, who've been editing all of our podcasts for some time now. Podcast Motor have a great range of services for podcasters at all levels. They can help you to set up your podcast, but also offer a couple of excellent services to help you to edit your shows and get them up with great show notes. Check them out at podcastmotor.com.